That particular committee was not privy to the nature or extent that the alien items were used as weapons, or even if they were. Any such tests were carried out by other covered units and monitored by other committees. The President of the United States was briefed daily on all findings regarding this project. He was given a summary that described in detail some of the more prominent findings and occurrences from the committee. The report gave a description of the gadgets and what some of their functions were. A sketch of what the gadgets looked like when they morphed into operation, activated, and performed their magic was sent along with the reports. The sketches were of little help and only served to show what the item looked like for a brief time during the period it took to sketch it. Change was the only constant concerning the alien gadgets. Once they activated, they oscillated continuously from one shape to another, and sometime their color would do the same. One scientist described them as having similar attributes as squids and chameleons, with their abilities to change color rapidly. All of the objects in the report were identified with at least one function, although the report stated that every gadget could possibly perform dozens, even hundreds of other roles. One report stressed that it would take years of study just to scratch the surface of what these things are capable of doing. For that reason, some on the committee made suggestions to the president that certain items, those deemed not to pose a national security breach, be released on a limited basis to their civilian counterparts. They were convinced it was time to let the scientific community have accesses to a few of the alien gadgets. Their thoughts were that something of this magnitude needed to be studied by a broad range of institutions, so that the benefits could be discovered and put to use in the near future, not some far and distant future, which it would be if they had to continue working under the civilian radar. Others in the committee disagreed and felt that this could be a Trojan horse, rationalizing that the aliens might be trying to lure a human race into thinking they are benevolent or worse, to intimidate mankind by letting humans know what they are up against. The president was briefed on both views and decided that it was bad policy to acknowledge a power that was infinitely superior to anything on this planet. The reason, he told the committee members, was that the sense of balance and security that Americans enjoyed could be disrupted by that kind of revelation, possibly damaging the American economy and throwing it, and then the rest of the world, into chaos. He emphasized to the committee that he wasn't being melodramatic. The aliens were far too strange and unknowable, and the public was not ready to be awakened to the phenomena. He then added, "The committee and all of its subordinate units would become more shrouded in its operations, not less." It was no coincidence that expenditures in military spending increased with each succeeding president. The discovery of the alien ship in 1947 had everything to do with it. The Cold War with the USSR, Soviet Union, was more of a red herring than a real fear of communism. Not that Russia weren't dangerous and unpredictable, they were. And did deserve keeping an eye on. A quote in the memo from the president. After the discovery of the alien ship in Roswell, many at the top echelon of government were more fearful of things not of this world than anything from this world. Unfortunately, the Soviets, who were already paranoid about the Western world, and looked upon the United States as the only country that could keep them from swallowing Europe whole, mistook the American military buildup as a direct threat to them. Therefore, the Cold War escalated to a point that the two superpowers became the real threat to this planet, more so than any threat from the aliens. Alien medical instruments. One alien object described in one of the reports discovered during the Korean War was a rectangular device with smooth rounded edges. It was 1 inch wide by 2 inches long and had the thickness of 1/4 of an inch. Some gadgets such as that one held its shape longer than most alien gadgets. The color was sapphire, and smooth to the point that it was slippery, which made it extremely difficult to hold onto. It was described as an incredibly beautiful object. It looked like a large precious stone, one that would rival anything found in any prestigious jewelry store, remarked one committee member. However, every gadget in the ship equally charmed those who saw them and worked with the alien things. The alien gadgets were all seductively beautiful, which belied their immense power to do both good and evil. When that particular item was placed on a living body, it detected tumors, both malignant and benign ones. Once the tumor was identified, the alien object projected an exact image of it on its screen-like surface. The projected image was three-dimensional and could be viewed on all sides as the image rotated slowly. The gadget only needed to touch the skin once, it then glided a few centimeters over the skin. If tumors were not present, and if the body was free of cancerous growth, the object remained stationary and a cryptic message appeared on its surface. The object did not need to scan over the entire body to locate a tumor. It knew the location of any malignancy instantly as soon as the object touched the skin. If the cancer had spread in the body, the object moved about the body identifying and presumably cataloging each area the cancer had spread to. The scientists believed that the alien scanner was mapping the location of each tumor and making notes of all pertinent information about the kind of abnormal growth it was and storing that information somewhere. But they never discovered how or where the information was being stored, whether it was accumulated within the object itself or if it transmitted the data back to the alien craft. Several gadgets took on the appearance of earthly objects, especially in the surgical category. Often a surgeon on one of the teams would get the surprise of their lives when an instrument that looked like a scalpel suddenly changed into something else during use. One object that was on the report from the Korean experiments looked more like a kitchen utensil, a cheese slicer, and not a surgical tool. It had a 4-inch long tubular handle attached to a spatula with a slit in the middle of it. The object appeared to be made of the same stuff as the body scanner, except that its color was ruby red. The flat part of the item was about 2 inches wide with the length of 2.5 inches. The thickness was less than a double-edged razor blade. It effortlessly removed skin from one part of the body and miraculously grafted it to another part of the body. No sutures were required to hold the skin in place. As soon as the skin was applied, the wound completely healed itself in less than 5 minutes. The instrument accelerated the healing process at the injury site as it fused the grafted skin to the wound. The condition of the person receiving the skin did not have an effect on the healing process of the grafted area, even when there were lesions or other wounds that would not heal due to some underlying illness such as cancer or diabetes. With that device, they were able to graft skin from one person onto another with the same rate of success. Skin color likewise did not matter. Skin from blacks, Caucasians and Asians were all intermingled with the same astonishing results. The receiving body never rejected the grafted skin. The skin from the donor assumed the color and matrix of that of the recipient at the same rate that it healed. Many of the mistakes and injuries that occurred early in the program were actually due to the expertise of the doctors and scientists, not the lack of it. Many times the doctors tried to assist or force the instruments to perform in ways they thought the gadgets should perform, often with fatal consequences. Also, the mood and the attitude of the scientists seemed to dictate what and to what extent the gadgets functioned. There are markings on some of the instruments, but probably the markings had no more significance than the markings on our own earthly tools and utensils, for example trademarks. We don't need written instructions on our knives and forks, screwdrivers and hammers, to understand their function. The culture we live in teaches us about those things. One of the most bizarre instruments discovered by the team was a triangular-shaped object about the size of a quarter, 25-cent piece. When the item was placed on a person's head, it instantly embedded itself in the skull, rendered the person unconscious, then lifted him up headfirst and vanished, taking the body with it. At first, those performing the experiment assumed that the body was transported back to the ship. This was before the advent of Star Trek, so none of them were familiar with the famous words, "Beam me up, Scotty." This experiment was one that was done in Korea during the war, to a wounded prisoner. The alien craft was parked somewhere in Okinawa, so they flew back to where it was to see if that person was in the alien ship. They presumed that like the other alien objects connected with the ship that maybe they had discovered a unique and quick way to get back to the ship from any place on the planet. but the person was not transported back to the ship. However, 3 days later, the triangular device was back on the craft. The person or his body was never found. The prevailing theory of what might have happened to him was that he was transported to some other alien ship in Earth's orbit or possibly to the interior of the planet, where it was suspected by one of the clairvoyants that the aliens had an outpost. A second psychic stated that the body was carried into the sun to be destroyed, for reasons he could not understand or explain to the committee. Like all the experiments that have been carried out using the alien gadgets, it too only worked on the living. One other theory that came from the research team, who studied that devilish device, was that the soul, or essence of what humans are, had something to do with the destination of the person. Another team supported that theory when they discovered in the course of their experiments that those who lost brain activity during the experiment also lost the function of the alien instruments. The gadgets simply became dormant, even when the man was kept alive artificially. The lack of brain waves rendered the devices useless. In every situation, the alien devices stopped working the moment the brain waves stopped. It appeared that the aliens had jurisdiction over humans only to the extent they remained alive. It was painfully obvious to the committee that the aliens were capable of doing whatever they desired to do when it came to humans. So what were the aliens up to? Some of the questions that were tossed around by committee members. How many aliens are on this planet? Dozens? Hundreds? Thousands? Did they want humans to participate by letting us have one of their vessels? Ships filled with supernatural instruments and gadgets? Why are they being secretive and not making some kind of formal contact with Earthlings? Did they stage the alien shipwreck? Was it a means of introducing their infinity superior race to our fragile inferior race? Perhaps the aliens wanted to let us know that we could not survive or handle full disclosure with them. Are they sowing the seeds for our destruction right under our noses? If the government is keeping this little project under tight wraps, are there other projects going on simultaneously? How many covert projects, and do other countries have them too? There were plenty of questions such as those, but few if any definitive answers. As fragments of the puzzle came together, the committee deduced from the alien gadgets that the aliens had a definite interest in the human anatomy. To what extent, they didn't have a clue. Since many of the instruments had beneficial features to them, were the aliens a kind of behind-the-scene paramedic unit? If so, why are they selective? Thousands of people die every day of accidents and diseases that could easily be treated with the gadgets that the aliens have. For a period of a few months, the committee switched gears and spent more time brainstorming on what was the purpose of the intruders, especially in the area of national security. Did the aliens pose an immediate risk to the country or to the world? That was the bottom line for the committee to determine. The committee enlisted the aid of additional clairvoyants and had them concentrate solely on making contact with extraterrestrial beings. The committee had no access to the captured aliens after the discovery of the saucer. At the time, they didn't care. They had plenty on their plate with the alien craft and its cargo, but during the late 60s and early 70s, the committee needed to understand the connection between the two. The aliens had some fantastic stuff, but why did they have this stuff? The committee was denied access to the aliens that piloted the ship, and was not allowed to know their location or even if they were still alive. Therefore, to get answers to why the aliens had that stuff, they had to find their own aliens and ask them. They tried using the clairvoyants in various numerical groupings to see if they could concentrate and direct their power to locate aliens. That failed to produce any results, so they were back to square one and they let them work individually again. Of the 6 or 7 clairvoyants on the team, one was predicting with 65% accuracy on where alien sightings would occur, the rest missed every time. Throughout the 60s and 70s, members of the committee crisscrossed TH Tings. Members of the committee photographed the UFOs, they chased them with fighter jets and choppers, and when the terrain allowed and there were no civilians in the vicinity, they attempted to shoot the UFOs down. They never came close to hitting a UFO. But no one in the committee thought they would. Their intentions were strictly to see if the aliens would respond, acknowledge them in some way, by blinking their lights or zapping the committee's aircraft with a ray beam, something. Humorous was the cry of one frustrated committee member. After two disappointing decades of seeing UFOs, without making any actual contact, the committee decided to change their approach and focus on what or who the aliens were visiting. The committee members read the papers and the tabloids, so they were aware of all the stories of alien abductions. They even interviewed some of the more prominent people abducted but came away with no answers. Even thought the committee was part of a secret government agency with virtually unlimited resources, high-level contacts and access to a myriad of public and private institutions. They ran into the same brick walls that stymied everyone who attempted to get classified information about secret projects. Therefore, other covert committees that had more knowledge about extraterrestrials remained unavailable to them. That committee was financed through the Department of the Air Force. And as everyone knows, those high up who work for the government, there can be no favoritism of one branch of the government over another by the Congress of the United States. That's doubly true for the Pentagon. If one department of the military had a secret government committee, then all of them have one or two, or perhaps dozens. The committee didn't want to get involved with those people who claimed to have been abducted by aliens. No specific reason was given. They were hoping that if there were another department that already did that perhaps they could borrow that information from that group. Obviously someone had possession of the aliens, dead or alive, and that committee had information that might benefit this committee. Whether it was policy or bureaucracy, committees were not allowed to share information with each other. Unable to breach those hidden barriers, the committee had to do their own investigations. The committee avoided dealing with abductees even though the committee knew that some were telling the truth. The few people that did get interviewed seemed to have ulterior motives for their claims. Some were only interested in a government payout. They would talk all day long about their experiences for a fee, or they were looking to blame their mental problems on the alien abductions, or the government, who many believed were behind the abductions. Overall, many of the abductees were looking for attention and offered little if any reliable information. The committee needed to know why these people was being abducted and those claiming to have been had no clue to why. Detecting a UFO was much easier than finding out what the aliens were up to. Locating a UFO was only a matter of coordinating their best psychic with their ground and air team. Once the psychic pinpointed the location where he felt a UFO might be, the ground team scoured that area until they confirmed it. After verification, they dispatched a specially equipped airplane that carried a multitude of radar and other sophisticated tracking devices to that sector. When the Air Force surveillance plane located a UFO, they kept an eye on the craft from a distance of several miles and transmitted pertinent information to the ground vehicles. They never used more than two ordinary cars, civilian, and remained incognito throughout the surveillance. The committee knew they were not sneaking up on the aliens or able to fool them in any way. They were more concerned with tipping off ordinary citizens but mostly UFO buffs, who regularly showed up at many of the same places the committee did. Layers added to shield the president, the committee began reporting all new findings and other discoveries to a newly created agency rather than directly to the president as they had done in the past. The new procedure was put into place between 1974 and 1976 for the sole purpose of isolating the executive branch from certain covert operations. In the committee's first report to the new agency, which was dated July 30, 1976, the date itself is a coded message, and had no significance to an actual day or year. They described the failure of the committee to identify anyone who the aliens were making contact with on this planet. The duration of the surveillance was 8 months and it produced 271 sightings, but not once was an alien craft observed taking or leaving human subjects. Alien ships were observed in residential neighborhoods, in open fields, and sometimes in the midst of large cities hovering amid skyscrapers. The sightings lasted from a split second to one of the longest recorded by the committee, which was 5 hours. The committee believed that time had no relevance to the sightings. They came to that conclusion when they noticed that on more than one occasion, when they had visual and radar contact of an alien craft, people on the street were completely unaware of what was taking place a short distance above their heads. We were either having mass hallucination among ourselves, and or the radar and other equipment malfunctioned simultaneously. We had visual contact as well as equipment contact, explained one of the committee members at the sighting. The logical conclusion was that the aliens were demonstrating to the committee their supernatural abilities to be seen or not to be seen, and by whom. It was a disturbing realization to the committee when they contemplated the implications of what the aliens were capable of doing. The whole operation came to a halt before they were done because of an emotional breakdown that struck nearly every member on the team. Two committee members had a nervous breakdown, three others developed similar psychosomatic illnesses and were absent for several weeks, and two quit the program. Whether it was a coincidence or not, this all happened the week they ended the surveillance campaign. That entire week was dedicated to hash over and reviewed most of the material from the previous 8 months of fieldwork. The details were increasingly more disturbing as they tried to ponder over and over again what it all meant. They knew they did not have all the facts, or possibly none of the facts, but what little they had was disturbing. There are hundreds of mental hospitals in the world that are filled with people who have claimed to see things that no one else, normal people, sees. Are the hospitals full of the wrong people? They wondered. Is it possible that many of the so-called mentally disturbed people are actually people who have been abducted and don't know it? Or are the committee members themselves psychotic and living this grand illusion that they have possession of a fantastical alien craft? A number of committee members throughout the program have lost touch with reality. Or perhaps they came in touch with reality and therefore were no longer capable of functioning in the chaotic world normal people call reality. Nonetheless, they were institutionalized with what was described as irreversible psychosis. How many scientists succumbed was not mentioned. At first it was believed that contact with something on the alien craft might have brought on their mental disease. Entering the ship literally alters the mind. All concepts of time and space are skewed while inside the ship, truly a mind-altering experience. The problem with that theory was that many other scientists who worked around the same alien things were not affected. The subject was dropped when it was pointed out to the committee that their job was not to figure out why psychosis happens but why aliens happen. There was little doubt in any of the committee members' minds that secrecy is the only policy. A consensus agreed to by the newly organized committee. The thought that there could be thousands of these alien ships flying around, showing themselves selectively to whomever they wanted to, was unnerving for those who knew about it. If those in the secret programs could barely maintain their focus with that kind of knowledge, much less their sanity, how then would the country or the entire world react if suddenly such information became public? That mankind is under some giant microscope and being observed by higher intelligent beings. If that information were to get out, would people continue in their daily routines of working, buying, playing, investing, and doing the millions of things that keep the economies of the world churning along? How would the news affect the stock markets? Any significant disruption would ripple across world markets and perhaps cause them to collapse, destroying whole economies. The end result would be anarchy. The planet would be primed for a dictatorship. A new world order would fill the void on the planet, possibly a new order installed by aliens. Pandora's box. Although the committee was unable to catch the aliens in the act of abducting humans, some of their researchers were making substantial discoveries with the items found on the craft. One item that was discovered inside the alien craft was shaped like a cigar box. It performed a similar function as the black chalk, by creating doorways through barriers, except that this box allowed more than one person at a time to penetrate walls. It had symbols on the top and three slight impressions on the cover or the lid of the box. That box had apparently been overlooked, or it was placed there by aliens decades after the crash. No one could be sure. The box did not have a lid that swung up or any moving parts to it. It operated like the opening of the alien spacecraft. An opening happened, but not by simple desire concerning the box. The three impressions on the top acted like a combination lock. Once the correct sequence was entered, an opening appeared and revealed a variety of geometrically diverse objects. No mention was made on how they broke the code or how long it took them to figure out how to open the box. When the box opened, it automatically engulfed everyone in its vicinity into an envelope of what was described as a strange cloud of electricity. One could easily walk in and out of its electric field without being harmed by it, but it left an eerie feeling with those who experienced it. The envelope resembled an electrified cellophane membrane that made it easy to define the boundaries. The envelope's capacity seemed endless. There was no apparent fixed range to it, it simply expanded to the task required. If there were two people, it encompassed the two. When there were more people, it embraced the larger group. It did not reach out to an individual or follow him if he or she strayed from the main contingent. It sensed what was required and performed accordingly. The envelope allowed those within it to walk through any barrier as well as walk on air. They didn't hover, they walked on an invisible platform. Barriers disobeyed the laws of physics when the strange mist that emanated from the box engulfed them. That box was the key to how the aliens abducted people from the most bizarre situations, from moving cars, airplanes while in flight, and from the upper stories of skyscrapers through sealed glass. Those were happenings and situations that would give the most daring of stuntmen nightmares. The abducted that were interviewed by committee members insisted that doors were never opened, locks were not broken, and that the aliens simply permeated through the walls and into their bedrooms and carried them, or let them walk on invisible bridges to the waiting spacecraft. Among the items in the box, the scientists identified one that subdued humans in a similar way as the laser pointer discovered earlier in the program. Only this item was smaller and looked like a sewing thimble. The thimble-like object had a green glow that delivered a paralyzing sting to any animal or man regardless of their size. During testing, a large bull elephant touched by the tip of the thimble on its truck froze instantly, and became like a statue. The paralysis lasted about 5 minutes before wearing off. It had the same exact effect regardless of the size of the animal or human without any noticeable side effects. The alien thimble only had to come into brief contact with skin on any part of the body to paralyze the subject. It could be repeated several times on the same subject with the same effect without apparent harm to the animal or individual. The cigar box contained many odd-shaped objects. One of the objects, a round metallic wafer no bigger than an Indian head penny, kept a human paralyzed indefinitely when it was placed on that person's forehead. The wafer attached itself to the head like a refrigerator magnet, and kept the recipient inert until the object was removed. There were dozens of those devices inside the cigar box. Taking inventory of items in the eerie alien box was hopeless. The contents never remained the same, numerically speaking. Sometimes the box was full and other times nearly empty. One theory was that the box existed in multiple places or dimensions at the same time, making the contents available to other unknown entities. The scientists did not describe much of the other gadgets in the box in great detail, so little is known all about them. The one predictable anomaly of nearly everything alien was the returning of items that came from the craft back to the ship in 72 hours. Since objects were not removed at the same time, but were checked out individually at different times of the day, the items returned in the sequence they were taken out of the ship. At the very instant the items returned to the ship, they were available to be checked out again, and the internal clock would reset itself and begin another 72-hour countdown. There didn't seem to be a limit on how often items could be taken off the ship. Unlike humans, who pride themselves on keeping some kind of order in their homes, the pots and pans in one designated place or cabinet, the dishes and silverware in another, etc. The aliens had no such neurosis. Alien objects, gadgets and things are never found in the same place twice, instead they occupy different spaces, nooks, cavities, or voids in the ship each time they return. This made finding particular gadgets a frustrating challenge. Even though alien gadgets changed appearance on a regular basis, the technician that worked with a particular item for a length of time knew its abilities and functions by simply touching it.